Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Before we start, a big thank you to Media Masters, the podcast where you'll hear one-to-one interviews with creatives and media execs, and a huge thank you to you, our voluntary subscribers, who pitch in a few quid a month to help us make even better, even more ambitious programs. Join us at themediapodcast.com/donate. Hello and welcome to The Media Podcast. I'm Ollie Mann. On today's show, first Brexit, then President Trump. With so much uncertainty in the financial markets, how will that impact our industry? Our panel confidently wades into the known unknowns. Also on the programme is news that pressure group Sound Women is to close at the end of the year. Founder Maria Williams talks to us about its legacy and what still needs to change. Plus, the BBC stars that are up in arms at the rise of the radio indies. Channel 5 records its best ever year-on-year profits. And the media quiz puts us all through our paces. That's all to come on today's Media Podcast. And joining me at the Hospital Club today are a trio of media buffs, a buffoonery of guests. I think that's the collective noun. They are radio exec Maria Williams, talkback MD Leon Wilson, and broadcast consultant Paul Robinson. Hello all.
Hello.
Just not sure about buffoonery, but it will work for now, I suppose.
I just realised that when we have Leon and Paul together on the show, you're the only duo we have when you've both got sandwich chains named after you.
That's yes. What we came up in the lift together, isn't
yeah,
it? Yes.
Yeah.
The left out.
You are left out, Maria.
And still actually, time.
You can be the filling, Maria.
I'd go to... Good Lord. I'd go to a sandwich chain called Maria.
Is that a bit too close to knuckle? Yeah.
We're living in a post-truth world. Who knows?
Absolutely.
Before we get into the impact of Trump and Brexit and whatever else is going to screw over the world this year, let's talk about the election night coverage itself. Kind of a big deal. I found myself drawn to CNN. I was watching the BBC, but I just had to see it with an American accent. And Katie Kay, except she doesn't call herself that, she calls herself Catty Kay. Weird. That wasn't enough for me. What about you?
Yeah, I watched CNN and the BBC. I tried watching ITV, which I thought was really dull. I mean, there was no energy there at all. Somehow, CNN had just more attack. A lot more opinionated, too, which I quite liked, actually. But you know what? I went to bed 1 o'clock and thinking, oh, it's all going to be fine. And then, of course, a bit like Brexit,
sounds
woke
familiar.
Up at 5 o'clock and thought, oh, it's all gone horribly wrong.
What did you watch?
I didn't watch anything.
What?
I was writing a script until about 3 a.m, and I couldn't watch anything. And then I went to bed. I was about 2 a.m, and then I was online in bed, thinking I'll just check before I go to bed, make sure it's all going well. Then it was about 2:30. I went, oh, hang on, she's behind in Virginia. Oh no, this is not looking good.
And who were you following?
Opinion I was on. Well, it was really interesting. I was trying it. I was between the Guardian live blog and the BBC, and it was actually quite hard to get a true picture of what was going on, I thought, online at least. It was because there was a lot of... it was confusing around that time in the morning, at 2 a.m, that was where it was all changing. But I felt like what I felt was that was sort of... Everyone wanted it to be a close contest because it suited their needs as broadcasters or as websites. It was sort of deliberately sometimes hard to work out what's going on because almost that confusion draws you in and you're kind of then stuck reading millions of different sort of, you know, feeds and stuff. It felt to me, in the UK at least, it was hard to get a true picture of what was going on until quite late in the day.
I, unlike Paul and Leon being stalwarts and staying up late, I'd learnt my lesson from Brexit, where I went around somebody's house and we stayed up to watch it, and it was so miserable I basically vowed never to do that again. So I looked at the time codes, you know, trying to work out when the results would come through, and decided I was going to go to bed early and get up early. So that's what I did. So
get
I missed all the excitement.
Before
I
breakfast.
Almost couldn't watch it, you know. I was really genuinely fearful. So when I woke up and sat down and I listened to everything on Five Live. Didn't go near Radio 4. I thought Five Live did an amazing job. Obviously, by the time I got to them, they were covering it nonstop. So I heard Trump's sort of celebration speech on that. And also, I got an awful lot of news online, which I've never done before. And I wasn't on my laptop. I was just on my phone. So Facebook, I saw Trump live, you know, accepting presidential nomination. I was getting Guardian alerts through, I was getting Telegraph alerts through. It was a very different experience for me and made me realise just how promiscuous a media consumer I have become. Mm.
Can we all agree that it was a virtue we were saved from Hugh Edwards again? Andrew Neil is a better choice to front any election. He seems like a lovely man, but he's so bland, isn't he?
In the morning I switched on for to Andrew Neil for a bit, and I, you know, straight off, I have to say,
I love a bit of Andrew Neil.
No, didn't. Why not? What's wrong? Admittedly, I was coming in at the end of a very long night, so it might be that all their kind of enthusiasm, energy was spent by then, but it just felt flat. It felt a bit complacent. I talked to my son, who, one of the reasons I couldn't get into my front room was it was full of 19, 20-year-old politics students all kind of hogging the television, and they were raving about CNN, and I think it's really hard.
Well, that sounds crazy. Well,
but I think it's hard. You wouldn't believe it, would you? But I think
like CNN
it's
binge.
Really hard, really however much Trump is going to impact on our lives in the UK, and he will for sure. It's very hard to replicate the absolute passion that you feel if you're in that country waiting to see who, not just your kind of equivalent of the Prime Minister, but your head of state. It's Donald Trump.
Oh yeah, but we're not America. I thought you were talking about people here.
No. So what I was saying is, I think that might be one reason why the CNN coverage was more
because it sort of is more
passionate,
visceral
and involved. And, you know.
I'd say shout out as well to Good Morning Britain. I think Piers Morgan has finally found his point, hasn't he? He's a mate of Trump's and he loves this story.
He's coming on Celebrity Juice next week.
Is he?
Yeah, with the Christmas special. So we're going to bring him right back down to earth.
I bet you are. Well, brave decision on his part.
Yeah, I think he was forced into it by Susanna Reid.
Okay.
I can't forgive him. He bumped me in the Dodgem cars when he's a reporter on The Sun at Radio 1, and I've never forgiven Piers
since.
Well,
fine. Well, he's going to go down next week. Okay. I mean, obviously, Piers. We can't wait to have
long
him on the
memory.
Don't upset poor people.
Right, let's talk about how the print covered it in the States then, because I guess the biggest story there is probably Newsweek printing 100,000 copies of a magazine.
125,000 copies.
125,000 copies that said Madam President on the front.
Yeah. But it's not the printing that's the problem. In fact, they sold them.
The actual distribution.
Of course, they had to hedge their bets and do both. But to actually put them on sale is hilarious. Utterly hilarious.
It's the nightmare scenario, isn't it?
I
think it is very interesting, you know, especially for those of us working in the podcast world where you put something up, if there's a problem, you take it down, you put it up. You know, there's huge flexibility. It's really taken the pressure off to some extent. It kind of reminded me just how difficult it is if you're in print media trying to navigate that.
And not on daily, but on a weekly or a monthly publication. Yeah. You know, it's a nightmare, absolute nightmare. You've got to forecast things and you're going to get it wrong occasionally. This was clearly a very large mistake. Not the first time it's happened in the US, of course.
I can imagine Clinton having that on a toilet wall by the end of the month. Like, that would be the picture.
I'd love to know what a copy is worth. Wow, I'd love to have one of those.
I suppose you're right, though, to make the point about the podcast world versus the print world in a way, because, you know, for Newsweek, that's their big souvenir issue. This is the collectible, isn't it? But it's got to be, by necessity, full of stuff that was written before it happened. You know, actually, for posterity, a copy of The Spectator Coffee House podcast is probably more accurate of what people were actually thinking. It's really hard for print now, isn't it?
I think it's incredibly hard. And also, just in terms of margins, you know, it's really hard for print to make money anymore. The idea that you have to basically do two versions, not just the cost of the actual printing it, but all that journalism, you know, which has to be really well researched, really well thought through. I mean, you know, that's a huge amount of money to try and recoup.
Surely what they're doing is just sweating the staff, isn't it? I mean, they're not hiring new people. Everyone's working bloody hard and crazy hours.
So I was actually, oddly, at Web Summit in Lisbon when this news broke, and there were a lot of Americans there, as you might expect. So it was quite interesting sort of canvassing the real reactions of people who work in the digital media industry about how they think it might impact their lives. Because a lot of them were Hillary Clinton supporters, or actually, if they were being honest, probably even Bernie Sanders supporters. And they all came from sort of bijou little startups, kind of companies that sponsor podcasts, actually. But really, if you ask them, how do you think this is going to affect their industry, they mostly said, well, he's going to cut taxes, and actually, we're going to see a lot of investment in America now. So what do you think is going to happen in the UK to our media industry as a result of not just Trump, but Brexit as well? Because we've seen ITV release some figures this week that suggest they're cutting staff and projects as a result of kind of uncertainty. Paul?
Well, I mean, ultimately it's all about uncertainty. It's more about uncertainty than the actual decisions or the policies of whoever becomes the person in power. At least with the US presidential election, we now have Trump, and it was interesting seeing how the markets absolutely plummeted at the prospect of Trump winning, and then he won, and then the markets came back and in fact exceeded and made up all of their gains and went on further. Now people are seeing it as a sort of glasses half full Trump as opposed the glass is half empty. So I think as far as the US is concerned, at least we know where we are. We don't quite know what his policies are, but he's probably going to be anti-bureaucracy, pro-business, and that probably will be good for business. As far as Brexit's concerned, it's completely unknown. And, you know, uncertainty is the worst thing. You know, at the moment, the markets are reacting nervously. Investors are not making decisions. They're just delaying making decisions. And so as a result, you know, businesses are going to cut. Also important to say that some people will use this as an opportunity to cut, you know, and they'll blame it on Brexit or blame it on the election when they would have done it anyway. But, you know, people will also take early action just in case. And so they'll cut because they think bad times might come. And if they do come, I'll be prepared now rather than waiting to face it when it happens.
But I mean, you run an indie, Leon, but it's owned by a massive company.
Yeah, by a European company. Yeah.
And so those big international companies, I wonder whether... Actually, again, they're going to think, well, we've got a government now in the US which is essentially encouraging enterprise and is going to create situations where we can find places where we pay less tax, and they're going to try and make it less bureaucratic to be an international organisation. Is there a good side to this?
I agree with Paul very much that companies will use an excuse. ITV, I think, their £25 million of cuts they've announced because of Brexit, that was planned well before Brexit happened. But in terms of being a good thing, well, I don't think Trump will massively affect us, if I'm honest. I think we pay far too much attention to the American situation. You know, one country out of 250. We shouldn't be so obsessed with their election. It's not our election. We never used to be 20 years ago, and I don't know why we're so, all so obsessed with it now. It all happened in 2000 with Gore and Bush, and I don't understand it. In terms of Brexit, I don't think it'll have a big impact either, really, actually, in terms of the media. I can't see my company I work for, Fremantle. I don't think they're going to leave the UK. I think whatever happens, they'll stay here. They seem committed to it. I don't think it's actually making as big an impact as many people think it has. I think a lot of people are just using it as an excuse.
But if that excuse is being used, then that means less advertising revenue, so that might affect you.
Well, the advertising revenue is probably down, I think, as much the fact that ITV aren't getting as many viewing figures as they were a year ago. I think that's part of the thing here. You know, X Factor's down to sort of 5.5 million viewers. That's, you know, it's a million down last year. In general, ITV is much softer than it was. And I think they're saying it's 7% lower ad spend in the final quarter. I think that's as much to do with the fact that their viewing figures are down.
It's odd kind of international sales details as well. Like, apparently no one made a version of Hell's Kitchen this year, which means they've lost 50 million or something.
Well, what's interesting about ITV is, you know, what Adam Crozier has done very successfully is move the business away from being highly dependent, in fact, almost totally dependent on advertising, to being only about half dependent on advertising, the rest coming from production. And they've done a very good job at creating international formats and selling shows abroad. But it does mean, of course, if overseas sales don't happen or if formats don't happen, that will impact their revenue. So those two things coming together are not ideal. At the moment, ITV is relatively protected against an advertising downturn, but that's the problem with advertising. Advertising is very sensitive to changes. You know, compared to Sky, for example, which is a subscription model, Sky is rock solid, no impact on Sky whatsoever, no impact on the BBC, the licence fee doesn't change. If you're advertising funded, you are going to suffer the winds of change.
And that means, actually, Maria, all those websites you were talking about visiting might start putting up paywalls, mightn't they?
Although I still think, out in the world of podcasting, there is a democracy about content that it would be very hard to undo. But Leon,
you were talking about The Guardian, The Telegraph.
Oh,
you go
Guardian,
on their websites
the
now and a big thing pops up saying, give us money.
But I don't go on The Times. I do subscribe to The Guardian, actually, because I found I was stopping buying a physical paper, but I really wanted to support their journalism, because I think without that, you know, we might not have MP expenses exposed, WikiLeaks, all those kinds of things. I think journalism is still crucial, and I am happy to pay for that. But, it's just really annoying when you want to read a bit and it pops up. And those decisions that people make about subscription models, I think, are usually made on a much more long-term basis. What do I want to support rather than can I buy this thing? But can I just ask Leon a question? Because you're working in the UK, but for a European company. Are you feeling the kind of risk that post-Brexit, big European companies like yours might suddenly decide to pick you up and drop you in Dusseldorf?
Not really, if I'm honest. I think there was a feeling the week afterwards, there was a lot of sort of, you know, task force being formed within the company and people going to meetings. And it seems to me everyone sort of just sort of realised it's not going to make that much difference. Whatever's, you know, even if it is hard Brexit, I don't think it'll actually affect things as much as we, in my business at least, I don't think it'll affect things that much. You know, I think it'll be business as usual. I think there was a week of extreme panic, for, you know, essentially a European company, but it seems to me, from what I can glean, that actually the plan is very much to carry on as it was before.
Although Keith Lemon being parachuted into Dusseldorf would be a cracking idea.
We are
to any
looking
show.
At doing a show surrounding Brexit, Brexit Day, as it will be known next year. I think.
He's one step ahead of the social media, isn't he, Felix?
A Brexit road trip with Keith and Gina. We're talking to ITV at the moment about that. That's ITV2's version of their take on Brexit.
Cake.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Actually, I mean, on that point, when people feel doom. You know, and okay, maybe it's only the 50% of people who wouldn't vote for Trump if they had the vote in this country. But when those people feel doom and, you know, they feel like everywhere they turn is bad news, they want cheering up, don't they? Could that be good news for comedy commissioning, actually?
I think it's probably good news for, like, late-night monologue writers on US chat, on chat shows, yes. I think this gives them 4 years worth of material, which they must be loving it in some level. It is a weird thing that, you know, the people that sort of didn't want Trump, actually, a lot of them will benefit from this in a weird way. In terms of people like escapers, I think that's been the case for the last 10 years, isn't it? You know, entertainment, or certainly the rise of the box set sort of, you know, world. I think that's a little bit of a reaction to the, you know, the state of the world. So, but I don't think it'll, you know, I think it'll be the same as it's been for the last 10 years, really.
Well, one story to belie the year's unpleasantness is Channel 5, who recorded 2 years of back-to-back profits. That is the first time the terrestrial broadcaster has done so. Paul, how have they done this?
It's a process that started with Northern and Shell, and whatever you think of Northern and Shell, they did actually start to refine costs and got the business to better shape cost-wise. They didn't really invest on the programme side and didn't do a great deal on the top line on the revenue. The smart thing Channel 5 did was they used Sky Media as their sales agency. And what Sky Media have done is held rates and managed to increase the amount of ads sold. So they've increased their revenue quite significantly. Top line's up by 20%, profits up by basically double, which says that, you know, they're leveraging their fixed asset base better. They've improved the schedule. It's a process of continued improvement. And, you know, that will continue now. They've also got the leverage of Viacom, of course, and the cross-promotional muscle and the buying power of Viacom. So that will help them to acquire better programmes more cheaply, better advertising sales, costs under control. It's now a business that's well run.
But it's also important, isn't it, that they're doing original programming, because they are importing a lot of stuff off Viacom and Viacom's other channel brands, you know, co-producing
less,
things.
Less, I think, a little bit, I'd say. Yeah, less. UK original programme. One of the reasons they're doing well is that they don't pay for a lot of their programmes. They're funded by Group M, which are a company that basically fund the programmes in return for sort of preferential advertising rates on the channel. So I think double the amount of money spent from Group M on Channel 5 budget shows. So they don't actually pay for a lot of their shows. So they get a lot of essentially free shows. They're not actually free because they have to give away good advertising rates. But they don't pay an awful lot for their programmes. Have an issue with Channel 5 is that they have managed to get costs down, but you'll struggle to make a lot of money from making a show for Channel 5. They have very recently upped some of their budget. So Lip Sync Battle was quite a big hit for them, and that was actually quite a high budget show. When I had a meeting with Ben Frau about 6 weeks ago, and he spent most of the meeting moaning about how much he spent on that. Maybe I shouldn't say that, but they have recommissioned it for another series, but they did spend actual proper money on that format, and it showed. It was, you know, it was you know, they had some good names on it, and, you know, rated pretty solid. It did about 2 million viewers.
Yeah, I mean, Leon's completely right. I mean, he had two strategies really in the days before Northern and Shell came in. Either you do that and you cut costs, either by paying less or by taking advertiser-funded programming, or you massively invest and spend a lot of money on content to drive up the audience and therefore drive up the advertising revenue. They've gone for the former model. It's worked.
And they have Ben Fogel. Lives in the Wild, is it called? Is a big hit for them. Fogel's a ratings.
And Big Brother's done very well too.
And
Big Brother, Big Brother's got back on form, got good ratings.
But neither of those shows are talents that they've grown.
It doesn't really matter, does it? I mean, they've got a lot of hours with Big Brother. I mean, the great thing about Big Brother is it's incredibly efficient in terms of number of hours of content for the money you spend. The ratings have been very strong. So I don't think there's any issue with that. You know, they've done very well with Big Brother. It was a great bank for Channel 4 for a long time. When Channel 4 lost Big Brother, they were really concerned about A, how to fill the hours, and B, how to fill in the ratings points, and they suffered for a while.
Okay, you are live on Channel 5. Please do not swear. I'm coming to get you after this advert. More media news in just a moment, but let's take a break to find out who's on Media Masters this week with Paul Blanchard. Let's spin that wheel. And it's landed on Christina Nicolotti Squires, the former editor of Channel 5 News, now director of content at Sky News. Let's hear a clip.
My responsibility is for the content, you know, how we put out the stuff that Sky News gathers, if you like, how we put it out on the telly, how we put it out on mobile, how we put it out on the radio, and various documentaries that we make, which can appear on the news shows, but also can appear on Sky Atlantic and various other places. So, yeah, it's a very broad range of responsibilities. How it works out day to day, I guess I might be making up as I go along. We'll find out more as I go along.
That was Christina Nicolotti Squires. You can hear all the Media Masters interviews for free at mediamasters.fm. Time for some more media news. And sad news this week that the radio pressure group, is that a fair description, Maria? Pressure group?
I don't know. It depends which side you're sitting on. Okay. I've been called, what was the worst thing I was called? An ultra-feminist terrorist cell,
I think was the worst thing we've called.
I'll take pressure group.
Sad news that the ultra-terrorist feminist pressure cell, Sound Women, is to close at the end of the year. Maria, you founded Sound Women.
I did.
This must have been a really difficult decision.
It was a really difficult decision. You know, nothing like this is easy. We've wrestled with this for about a year and a half, but I think it is the right decision. And we have been so thrilled and cheered by the kind of wonderful response to it, actually, because it's as hard closing an organisation as it is launching one. And actually, the love that came across Twitter made it all worthwhile.
I mean, we've talked a lot on this show about the roles of women in the media and actually how generally women are underrepresented and what do we do. Liz Howell talks a lot about female representation on telly. But you guys really were the first people to sort of make it official that you have a campaign to get more women on the radio. Let's stop just bollocksing on about it and do something. So what have you achieved?
Ooh, lots. 5 glorious years. And I think, you know, it's important to say that. 5 years of a lot of people working very hard. And I think what we set out to do was to change the industry in 2 ways. By trying to change the way the industry thinks. And we did that by lobbying in a really collaborative way, I think. We were very careful, you know, not to just go in finger wagging, but to try and be part of the solution. So we did research as well. I know some of the early meetings I had, God, I got told we were, oh, you're a nice to have, I got told. Like it was just a little extra cherry on the cake rather than something that was, you know, for me, fundamental about saving our industry, really. And there was a woman who shall remain nameless from local radio, where when we went in with the figures and basically said, you've got no local radio women hosting a breakfast show on their own, refused to accept this could possibly be the case. So I think doing the research that had never been done before about the number of women on air was really, really useful, because as soon as we showed that to people, you know, it almost wasn't about making the argument. The stats spoke for themselves. It was just so crazily skewed.
But is it as bad now? It feels like it isn't. So you have achieved things there, right? There are females hosting BBC breakfast shows.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And as soon as we launched, that was one of the things that we showcased. And immediately the same people who basically said there wasn't a problem were back on the phone. We've done mentoring schemes with women in BBC local radio. We've done 3 huge mentoring schemes anyway. But we have, I think, through that, changed the way people think. So it's now not acceptable to have an all-male panel anymore. It's just not acceptable to have 2 white men presenting the news for 3 hours every morning non-stop without having women in there, because if you don't have women on air, you don't have women's lives and experiences. It's not just, oh, we'd like a slightly different voice. It's the stories that aren't getting through.
And you see 2 women, don't you, more frequently as well? I mean, again, Good
Miranda
Morning Britain,
Sawyer,
quite common
God
as well.
God bless Miranda Sawyer and everyone who sails in her. She wrote on the weekend that 2 women had hosted the Today programme and no one had died. And it's like, yes, victory. You know, we are getting there. So we're making huge strides. And I really think now we have kind of properly changed the perception of the radio industry. So the radio festival, you go to the radio festival and you walk in and it's no longer a sea of white men in suits, which it really was when I started. And then it's very hard to feel part of an industry if you don't see anybody who looks like you. And that's not just women. I'm here for Sound Women, but you know, it counts if you are young and everyone else there is a senior manager. It counts if you are black, Asian or minority ethnic. you know, there are lots of voices that aren't being heard on radio that we want to change. But the other thing I'm really proud of that we've done is we haven't just lobbied the industry so that there's equality of opportunity. We've also, I think, really worked to develop women in radio on all sorts of levels. So we've got a massive big training scheme starting tomorrow in Bristol and going to Manchester, London, Birmingham, that's all about technical training. Our members have been asking for technical training for a long time. But it's also about things like confidence, about how to brand yourself, you know, if you ever thought about being a voiceover artist, if you're a reporter, all those kinds of things. And I really hope that we've equipped a lot of women, particularly through our mentoring scheme, which is just brilliant for getting women to kind of aim really high and not be afraid. I hope that we've equipped them to kind of take advantage of those opportunities when they come up. There's some really kind of... I don't know, are they interesting, funny, kind of, you know, heartbreaking stats going around that show that if a job comes up, a bloke will look at it and think, yeah, I've done a bit of that. I've got 20% of the jobs, you know, skills they're looking for. I'm going to throw my hat into the ring. Whereas a woman will often as not have 80%, 90%, 100% of the skills, but will be still kind of basically going, oh, I'm not sure. What do you think? Is it, you know, is it right for me? Would I be good enough? Blah, blah, blah. So I think a lot of it is about not just those opportunities, but really empowering all women in radio and audio to get out there and grab them.
But you do still hear from people, usually men, but sometimes even women, in the radio industry who will say, still, oh, well, there's research about this and it says that a lot of women don't like listening to women.
Yeah, it's just rubbish.
I don't believe that. I mean, look, I think, you know, my experience of Sound Women, I've been to a few Sound Women events and I really found them quite inspirational. And I enjoyed, you know, my time at the Radio Academy working with Sound Women. I think it's fundamentally changed. When I was at Radio 1, I remember having a huge battle to get Jackie Brambles onto a daytime show. There was nobody on Radio 1 who was on daytime. She was put on the early show. We eventually took Gary Davis off and put her on. That was a huge battle. But when I was a kid listening, we had Anne Nightingale, and that was it. You know, women did not think radio was a career for them, and I think that's fundamentally changed. I think there's still more work to do, and what really matters now is that everybody owns the issue and that work continues, but it should now be continued as part of the overall management of radio stations. But it's a fundamental change, and I think the other thing I say, Maria, is you've done it very quickly. You know, we've had 25 years of practically no progress, and in the last 5 years you've made fantastic progress, and now every major network does have women on in peak time. Radio 2 is the one where there's no one actually in the regular schedule, although, of course, the depths are frequently women. Radio 2's got to have a woman on daytime at some point. But, you know, you've made an amazing difference.
What I'm worried about, though, if we may speak honestly between us, is that it will slip back with it. And so we're very, very keen to make sure there is some kind of legacy. We're working to create a digital legacy so that our members can still manage to kind of communicate and correspond and swap tips and swap contacts with each other. We're in talks with people about keeping the mentoring scheme going. But our kind of key message when we closed was although Sound Women, the organisation, is closing, the legacy is very much continuing. And I would like to throw the baton out there to everybody listening to basically say, please pick this up. You have nothing to lose from this. All you have to do is gain. You know, the business case for having more women on radio is really strong. Women make up the majority of radio listeners. It makes no business sense to have white men throughout the day. You know, there are brilliant broadcasters out there. We know it, male and female. We know it's going to take a little bit more time. But I really would urge everybody, not just Sound Women, not just the kind of new younger generation of women coming through, but men too, all people working in this industry, to just see this as a really great opportunity to go out there and get fresh voices, get fresh experiences, seize those female listeners because they are there for the taking.
And Leon, is this happening in your sphere of entertainment telly? Because, I mean, I know you've got Sandy Toksvig hosting QI, for example.
Yes, we do, yeah, which has been a big success.
You've got Fern and Holly on Celebrity Juice, da-da-da.
Yeah.
But, you know, you look at Mock the Week, it's still a sausage party, isn't it?
Oh, no, they have more women on, you know, I mean, Danny
had
Cohen...
had one when I saw it last week.
Yeah, I mean, they sort of mandated about 4 years ago, I think Danny Cohen said there had to be a woman on every panel show, and that's definitely the case. And most, actually, QI, I think there's a few episodes of the series where there's like three women on it as well. Like, there's more women than men on it. So that's definitely, in terms of panel shows, there are more women. Mock the Week, well, I don't make that.
But, you know, while there might not be as many women as you might like to see on it, I think the tone of the show has changed a bit. There's not so much of a kind
not
of...
quite testosterone-fueled.
I can't say the word, you know, something fest. It's slightly more warmer as a place. Well, I don't watch it a lot, but when I see it, it seems slightly different programme than it was 3 or 4 years ago. But yeah, in telly, you know, well, there's been a huge driver for BAME, obviously, to be in the industry. I don't think there's been quite the same gender imbalance in television as it was in radio. There is a bit, definitely, especially at the top end. But I feel like it's never been quite... I think radio, it has always been a bit more traditionally male dominated until recently. I think Sam Wynne done a fantastic job of it's just definitely something needed to change, and it does seem to be changing. In television, our big drive at the moment really is about sort of diversity generally, about disability and BAME, and that's a big priority for everyone in television at the moment.
Okay, one more radio story. 50 BBC personalities, including Jarvis Cocker and Andrew Marr, have written a letter to the Sunday Times asking the corporation to look again at its charter renewal plans for radio. Maria, what is their beef?
I think it's about compete and compare, isn't it? Which is this new system that's been operating in TV for a long time that is being rolled out to radio, that means that indies, independent production companies, can pitch for more hours of content. So at the moment, indies are limited to about 20%, I think, and that is going to go up to 60%, but it's not going up to 60% until 2022. Yeah. And also, that does not mean hello indies, here is 60%. What it means is this 60% is open to you in that fabulous, glorious BBC phrase, the WOC, the window of creative competition. So obviously I'm now very firmly outside in the indie world, but I was at the BBC for a very long time. I understand just how destabilising it must be if you've been working on one particular show in the BBC very happily for years to suddenly feel like you might have to pitch for it. Obviously, that is the reality for those of us on the outside, and I think there's huge amounts to be gained from getting very skilled in pitching, in, you know, refining your brief and coming up with ideas. So I think it's a great thing. I don't think the listeners will notice any change. You know, things might change slightly, but they certainly won't see any drop in quality.
I agree with that. I don't think there's been a sort of the excellence will drop. I don't think that's the case. A lot of the shows I listen to the BBC are now made by independents, and they are as good or if not better than they ever were.
But are they as good value for money? That's the point, isn't it?
They're exactly the same. Exactly the same. They don't. Exactly. The guide
anything,
price
better
is the same.
Money because the BBC aren't allowed to hide any, you know, it's all kind of, it's done above the line, as it were. You know, and they know exactly what money's going out of the building, and that pays for those shows. I think it won't make a difference to the quality of the programmes. The people who want to make radio want to make radio. They're not doing it to make a load of money in general. But, you know, you don't make loads of money from radio. We're doing a Radio 4 pilot at the moment. You don't get any money from it. But you do it because you want to make something. And I think the people who want to make these shows for independence will be people that are passionate and good at what they do. They won't be doing it to just make a load of money off it.
Yeah.
There's no money to be made, really, in making radio, you know, compared to television or films or anything else, you know, other sort of media. It's kind of that from a production point of view. There isn't the advertising side. But, you know, people who want to do this will want to do it to make good programmes. They're not going to do it just for a quick buck.
And if you look, sorry, but I mean, those of us in the indie sector, you know, everyone's looking at digital, everyone's moving out to audio because you can't make a living from radio at the moment. You know, one Radio 4 documentary is not enough to make ends meet. So the idea that strands might be up for grabs, and, you know, obviously the Archer's Desert Island Discs aren't coming out anytime soon. The BBC's kind of crown jewels will stay very firmly in-house while this is rolled out. But the idea that you might be able to, you know, be able to do something bigger with all the brilliant creative teams at your disposal, many of whom were trained at the BBC, you know, we're all moving in very similar circles, I think is the sort of thing that could, you know, not just benefit the indie industry, but be the difference between some staying afloat and others not.
OK, final word on this to you, Paul. The NUJ are debating this on Wednesday. Here's their question. Will the Archers go the same way as Bake Off? Your answer to that?
Well, Archers is not going to go to Channel 4, is it? No, I mean, that was just a complete cock-up by both the BBC and by Channel 4. I mean, my point here is twofold. First of all, the BBC has to keep a critical mass of production. I totally understand that. And there's a trade-off here. You don't want to completely decimate internal production because that keeps, you know, the creative process and the creative engine going. But putting more out to indies must be a good thing because it's better ideas. It's still going to be value for money. It's the right thing to do. I was rather bemused by the statement, though, that said talent-led programmes and Desert Island Discs and Archers will not be included, which makes him think that maybe other shows are not talent-led. I mean, radio is all about talent. It's all about people. You listen to the radio because someone is engaging, says something that's going to, you know, make some sort of emotional connection with you. So I found that rather odd. I think this is a good thing. I understand the concern inside. Ultimately, I think it will benefit listeners. I think actually, Maria, I disagree. I think it'll be better for listeners.
Okay. Can I say one more thing as well, actually, to my colleagues within the BBC, you know, who do such an amazing job and are brilliant creative people and, you know, I'm sure will do very well once they're in this system, once they get used to pitching. Actually, lots of them might find they really enjoy it. And also, it's very easy sometimes when you're in the BBC to be stuck, not even just on one network, but on one programme on one network. And one of the things I understand is going to happen is that it will become easier for people with in the BBC to pitch to other bits of the BBC. And that is a great thing creatively.
100%. Absolutely. Totally right.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There is just time for our media quiz.
Da, da, da.
This week it's entitled Time Check. We've selected a 10-second audio clip for you that hints at a media story from the past week. Your job is to guess the correct story before the clip ends. You'll all have 10 points to start. We'll deduct a point for each second that goes by before you give a correct answer.
Oh my goodness, instructions are more complicated than the quiz.
I drifted off halfway through that. I'm sure.
Okay, we'll have a go.
The winner gets a special breaking news button that they can use in everyday life. Okay, Maria, you're first. Here's your clip.
I switched on this morning, time to hear you being...
Stop the clock!
2 seconds deducted, Maria. You have 8 points if your answer is correct. What is it?
This is Sir Jimmy Young.
It is.
Who died this week, sadly, aged 95. He was clearly an absolutely amazing broadcaster. And of all the tributes out this week, I know there's a great deal of love for him at Radio 2. You know, all my kind of ex-colleagues at Radio 2 just thought he was amazing. But one of the best anecdotes I thought I saw about him came from Jeremy Vine, who did a really lovely little tribute where he was talking about Jimmy doing a phone-in, not a phone-in, he had a guest there, but a listener phoned in for the first time and got through to the production office and was hopping mad about some point that was being made, and the producer wrote it down on a piece of paper, took it through to the studio, and Jimmy picked it up and not only kind of absorbed it, but asked it to the person he was interviewing. I think it was Ted Heath, actually. And that was basically the first time anyone had done that. Mm. And that's, what, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, and that is now the bedrock of every radio interview stroke phone in.
Yeah, he was basically the first person to say it's okay to interview the Prime Minister and then play Fleetwood Mac. And before then, those were two different shows.
Sometimes the only thing you can do after interviewing the Prime Minister is to play Fleetwood Mac, yes.
Leon, your story next. Don your headphones. Which news story is this?
Stop the clock.
And you achieve that in 4 seconds, so therefore you're down to 6 points if this answer is correct. One behind Maria.
I think that's a band. Was that Peter Fincham and Tim Hinks' band?
It was.
Like the what they called No Expectations.
No Expectations, very good.
Yeah, so the story is that Tim Hinks and Peter Fincham, or they haven't actually announced it, but it's sort of story's broken that they're, I mean, it's the least well-kept secret in television, really, that they are forming some kind of new company to working together. And I believe the thought is that they're going to be umbrellaing other people. Other companies, sort of, they'll be sort of funding or sort of running, you know, sort of overseeing other companies that they're going to form. So all I say is, Peter and Tim, give me a call. I'm around.
You're ready to be umbrellaed.
Yeah.
What was interesting about that is they're calling it Expectation Entertainment.
Yes.
Yeah. Or EE. And there is another EE, which of course was also formed by two titans, and it was Orange and Deutsche Telekom
together. I mean, I think they'll. I mean, I would imagine they'll make a success of it because they tend to have backed the right horses over the years.
They do. There's another indie, isn't there, this week that there was news about being backed by Alex Watsit from All to All and a load of other people.
Yes,
as well.
Mom. And yeah. Dave Liddiman as well is involved.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's kind of like people are sort of rebelling against the super indies and starting some other proper indies.
Well, I think, but it's not enough just to run an indie nowadays. People have got to run like sort of umbrella indies. That's the kind of what everyone wants to do. It kind of seems the cool thing to do. They don't want to just run and set up a new company. You set up five companies at the same time.
Okay, finally, Paul, your 10 seconds on the clock starts now.
Well, first, it's time to talk about the story we left on a bit of a cliffhanger, didn't we?
This is
about what people on Tinder are doing to sort of increase their profile pictures.
Oh, the 10 seconds.
I have no idea what that is.
Oh, well, it was nice
no
to hear the whole 10 seconds.
Absolutely no idea.
It was the sound of local TV station That's Manchester. Do you know the story now?
This is the station who've had some changes made to their promise of performance. And they've taken out words like engage to involve. And basically the whole thing's become a bit of a sort of dog's breakfast and basically a very soft promise. So they're promising nothing really now.
It is, yes, the story that local TV station That's Manchester has asked Ofcom for the terms of its licence to be changed for the third time, according to Private Eye.
But what Tinder's got to do with it, God knows.
I mean, no one's watched any of that station, have they? So you can't expect Paul to know.
I mean, I love your meals even more now, Leon. I mean, the point is that local TV is still a business model that's not been proven to work and is a challenging model. And, you know, I don't know whether it ever is going to work, but at the moment, no one is making local TV successfully and making money and producing great telly. So, you know.
I mean, it's good for watching reruns of Spaced on London Live.
I'm not sure that's good. That's my desperation.
It's like without having to put a DVD in.
Yeah. When you're stoned.
You've still got a DVD
player. That's what it's for.
Or stream it. I don't know. What are the young kids doing?
Whatever the kids do now. Yeah. Well, that is it for our show today. Thank you to Paul Robinson, Leon Wilson and Maria Williams. And as you're now up to date with us, why not get inspired by listening to the latest episode of Media Masters with Sky News' Director of Content, Christina Nicolotti-Squires. I've been Ollie Mann, the producer, Matt Hill, and the Media Podcast is a PPM production. Until next time, bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.